Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome back to Sleep Science Today for another episode on sleep and the science behind sleep. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and we have a special guest today. His name is Xander Kegg. Xander's going to share his experience with sleep work and a couple other surprises. So, Xander, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It's great to be here.
We're glad to have you here. So you practice as, or you are licensed as a mental health counselor, basically, right, a social worker. And I know that you and I together, well, we originally met because we both do some sleep work. So I figured this would be a great opportunity to learn from you about your experiences working with clients with sleep issues, how you got into it, what it's like, all the background deals. So I want to open it up to you to first introduce yourself to us, tell us more about your background, and tell us how you got into working with sleep clients.
Absolutely. Well, I am a licensed clinical social worker. I live in Orlando, Florida. I originally grew up in Los Angeles. I served in the U.S. Coast Guard. I was in law enforcement for a while. I've done a lot of different things, so it's been a lot of fun. I've been to school a few times and have a few degrees, including my Master's of Social Work. And I found myself learning about sleep, I guess you would say that, like learning about the significance or the importance of sleep when I was in my Master's of Social Work program starting in 2010. And as a first-year social work intern working at a crisis counseling center, I was doing what was called biopsychosocials, meaning I was sitting down with individuals one-on-one, and I was asking them a series of questions that had to do with their upbringing and their education, their diet, their income, their health, and sleep was a category on the biopsychosocial assessment. And so we would ask questions like, how many hours of sleep are you getting per night? We might even ask something more pointed like, how many hours of sleep did you get last night? And is that usual? Because, you know, there's always going to be differences in the amount of sleep we get on a given day. So that was my basic understanding of it's important. We should get that information. It has a lot to do with maybe how a person's experiencing their circumstances in their life, regardless mm-hmm. of things like income or education level. And then in my second year as a Master of Social Work student, I was in a residential psychiatric setting. And that's when I was given like sort of the next level of awareness of sleep. And so, for example, when somebody is having a manic episode, right, meaning that they have a lot of energy and are either sleeping very little or in some cases not at all for like a few days in a row, it makes us go out of our minds, basically. We lose track of reality. And so one of the things that they would do is when these individuals were brought into the hospital involuntarily because they were perceived of or as a danger to themselves or others, they would be brought in and they would be given a cocktail of medications. And oftentimes what that would do is it would knock them out for like 48 hours, 72 hours to give them an opportunity for their brains to, you know, calm down, for their bodies to calm down, for them to get not necessarily sleep because they were somewhat sedated, but at least they were not up and running around and out of their mind and hallucinating visually or auditorily. And so I was like, oh, wow, sleep really does have such an important impact on our well-being that if for some reason we're not getting good sleep and we have, for example, a diagnosis of bipolar disorder and we're not getting a good night's sleep, it could manifest in a manic episode if we go too long without a good night's sleep, right? And then it just gets worse and worse and worse, for a lack of a better way of saying it. So that was kind of my grounding in sleep is really important to our overall well-being, and sleep is directly connected to our mental health.
Right. Yeah, that's that's so important because, you know, you and I were talking about this before we started recording the show, and, you know, not too long ago, in the not too distant, history, sleep was seen as just sleep. You sleep or you don't sleep. It really wasn't tied to health. It wasn't tied to how it works or why it works or what it does or anything. And now today, with all the research that's been done since the 70s, basically, you know, we've learned so much. And then that leads to the fact that, you know, it really does impact your mental health, your physical health. It's a part of our system. It's not just a thing that happens. And, when you saw people that you were working with who weren't getting good sleep, and then maybe you saw people who were getting good sleep, what was the difference? Did anybody report anything to you? Tell us your experiences with those.
Well, I'll say at first, I spent most of my social work career as a clinical case manager, so I had to do these biopsychosocials with everybody I ever worked with, and they were primarily people that were chronically homeless, that had substance abuse disorders, and as you might imagine, these individuals were not getting good sleep, right? For a number of reasons, or a number of factors, and so it wasn't like I was working on getting a good night's sleep for somebody who was sleeping outdoors, because there were a lot of safety factors. So sleep was something that I was paying attention to, but it wasn't the primary component of the work that I was doing with them. It wasn't until years later, when I was working in a community mental health clinic with veterans and their family members, that I noticed I had a caseload of about 15 patients at that time. And I said to my supervisor in the clinic, I'm like, they all have sleep problems. I wouldn't have said they had insomnia. I didn't have the ability to diagnose that. But there was definitely a lot of sleep disruptions and dysregulated sleep, as we might say. Mm-hmm. And my supervisor, who was CBT insomnia trained, I was just CBT, right, cognitive behavioral therapy trained, she handed me over a bunch of materials and she said, read up on this, watch some videos. And I said, you know, I'm going to start talking about sleep more specifically, like I was going to focus on sleep. And I did that with every single patient I was working with for about 2 or 3 weeks, and noticed that as they started to make changes, right, like sleep hygiene, right, they were implementing that and other things they were implementing into their day-to-day life, what started to happen was whatever conflicts they were dealing with, whatever stressors that were going on in their life that was causing little dysfunction for them at home or at work, those stressors and conflicts didn't go away. But because they were starting to get a better night's sleep on a regular basis, their ability to withstand, right, to tolerate, to navigate those stressors and conflicts, that's what improved. And then their symptoms, right, their anxiety symptoms, their depression symptoms, all the other symptoms they were experiencing, those started to decline, mm-hmm. right? They didn't disappear, but they did decline. They weren't causing as much disruption, as much dysfunction. And that's when I realized, okay, this is it. Like, sleep is foundational, and I need to make sure that I'm checking in with everybody that I work with in whatever capacity I'm working with them, and make sure that sleep is something that I bring to their attention regularly so that I can keep them right, on track with that, because it's not anything I can do. I can't force them to sleep. I'm not in their bedrooms at night. And, you know, I learned over the years that there are a lot of reasons why people might not be sleeping well. It's because of whatever they're ingesting throughout the day that's disrupting their sleep. It might be the overexposure to certain lighting that might be disrupting their sleep. It could be that when they were younger, they were raised in an environment that was very unsafe. And sleeping was not safe for them because there was gunshots outside. People were coming into their bedrooms at night that shouldn't be. And so they developed a fear around being asleep. Mm-hmm. And so we had to work through those things, of course, but helping them focus on getting a good night's sleep was like a miracle in their lives in some cases.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, and you know, that really kind of highlights something that is becoming more and more well known or well recognized in the medical community, and even outside the medical community. And what I'm talking about is how our whole system, our body, everything about our health, is a system, and you don't separate out parts. And here you're talking about, you saw how when people were starting to improve their sleep, you could see other improvements. And it works in reverse too, because it's all a cycle. It's not forward or reverse, it's a cycle. And one of the things when I talk to sleep patients about improving their sleep, we also talk about, well, if you're going to improve your sleep, what's going on with your diet? What's going on with your schedule? What's going on with other anxiety producers in your life? And they all come together. You can't pick one that's going to impact the others. They all impact each other. So
it's such an important area. If you're not getting a good night's sleep, then your circadian rhythm is dysregulated. And when that's dysregulated, so is your body's ability to balance your blood sugars and your mood and your appetite and your immune response. Everything. Yeah. Everything is out of whack. And so if your appetite is out of whack, you might lose weight or gain weight, or, you know, it's and it's all based on this sleep. It really does boil down to, if we don't get a good night's sleep on a regular basis, it's going to create a lot of chaos in our lives.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that, you know, one of the things that you do as part of your work is to provide a lot of information to corporate clients, people working in corporate environments, about all sorts of mental health issues. I'm curious sort of your take on what do the clients find important in terms of what do they want to know about, and do they recognize the value of sleep?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the questions that I get at the end of a workshop that I do on sleep, I'll get asked questions like, should I take melatonin? What about wearing one of those devices that, like, keeps track of my sleep? Mm-hmm. Right? They want to, you know, it's like a lot of things. They want to know sort of shortcuts or, I say to people, you know, your body produces melatonin. And if it's not producing it in enough quantity, the first place to start is reducing blue light exposure. And if that doesn't work, then to go see a doctor to see if maybe your body is not producing enough. But you have to give it the opportunity to produce, right? And so as the day gets later and later, our bodies, right, are hardwired to begin, pushing melatonin into our bodies as the lights get dimmer, because our bodies are still thinking that we're in a time when we don't have a lot of artificial lights. We still just have candlelight and moonlight and starlight, and it's like, oh no, like, we have all these types of lights now, and some of them really do disrupt our body's ability to produce and distribute melatonin. And these hacking devices, right, the rings and the watches. And I say, well, you know, if that's something you want to do for your own, you know, personal interest, those things aren't going to really help you get a good night's sleep, right?
Right.
So being able to get a good night's sleep involves many different small to medium sized to maybe even large sized adjustments that we can make throughout our day and in our lives in general, right? It's it's about prioritizing sleep. It has to become a priority.
Yeah, and it's you know, in our culture, at least here in the U.S., you get so tuned in through commercials and social media and everything that, oh, if you have a sleep problem, just go take a pill and everything will be wonderful and fine. And the problem is that you alluded to it before, which was, you know, certain sleeping pills may sedate you, but they don't cause you to sleep, which means you're missing out on the deep sleep, which is the area where your body and your brain actually repair. So, you know, they're not sleeping pills, they're sedating pills, and they're only meant for short-term purposes. So that's a whole other topic we could do a whole show about. But we're at a point where I need to take a break. We'll come right back and we'll pick up from there. So hang on to that thought. We'll be right back. Have you ever wondered why you can't sleep well? Well, there could be lots of different reasons. In order to figure it out, I wrote the book, Why Can't I Sleep Well? It includes 150 common sleep questions that are asked and answered, and I provide all of the supporting science and evidence to address each of the questions. I encourage you to get a copy of Why Can't I Sleep Well by Andrew Kolsky. It's available at www.sleepsciencetoday.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We were just talking about medications and pills for sleep. Xander, I cut you off.
I'm like, oh no, what was I going to say? I totally forgot. I mean, it's just interesting to think about. People will say, oh yeah, now I remember. People will say things like, I'll sleep when I'm dead, right? That's kind of a common thing people will say. Or, well, I'll just catch up on my sleep on the weekends. And so when I do my sleep workshops, I teach them about sleep debt and how, unlike financial debt, which you can pay off, you cannot pay off sleep debt. And right. I think, to a certain degree, I think that might frighten people because, well, how old are you now? How long have you gone without getting a good quality and quantity of sleep? Because, you know, what we know is if you've gone, you know, decades without a good quality and quantity of sleep, the chances are more likely that you're going to experience things like diabetes or dementia, cardiovascular disease, because sleep debt compounds just like, you know, financial debt compounds, but you can't pay it off. And so you can, it's like smoking cigarettes. You can quit smoking cigarettes after 10, 20, 30 years, and there's some benefit to that, but the damage you did is the damage you did.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That's such an important point, because I think that a lot of people don't understand that, you know, even a little bit of sleep lost has a negative impact. I was talking with another guest on another show about this very topic and the studies that are out recently about how even 1 minute of sleep that you're not getting has such an impact on things like potential dementia type of issues and other type of physical harm issues. And you can't go get that minute back on the weekend, right? It's gone. You didn't get it. And that's why it's so important to get quality sleep so that you get that deep sleep so that your body is able to do all the things that it's designed to do when you're getting deep sleep.
Yeah. Well, just think about, you know, every year about this time during daylight savings time, losing that hour of sleep is a big disruptor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major disruptor. People don't go to bed an hour earlier to make up for it, right? Until we adjust. People who work different shifts that are constantly changing, day shift, you know, graveyard shift, the midday shift, like when you're on a constant shift cycling like that, that definitely disrupts, you know, our ability to get a good night's sleep. So there are things that we are in our control, things that aren't in our control. I've actually heard that they've been looking at getting rid of daylight savings time in the United States because the number of cardiovascular incidents that go up right after daylight savings time begins, they're starting to notice the pattern now, and they're going, oh, maybe that's because we're doing a whole hour's worth of sleep disruption, not even a minute, an hour's worth.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of, you know, great research that's being done and research to be done because, you know, sleep is one of the sort of last frontiers that we're just starting to learn so much about. But before too much time escapes us, I want to make sure that we also get a chance to talk a little bit about one of the surprises we promised, which is the third space. And I'm gonna introduce it to you that way and let you fill us in about what the third space means to you.
Okay. So I'll tell a little story. When I was growing up, I found that I was fairly regularly faced with some challenge. And it would go something like this. The boys line up here, the girls line up here, and the boys are going to go do this activity and the girls are going to go do that activity. And I would be like, wait a minute, but I want to do that other activity. I don't want to do this activity that you say I'm supposed to do. And I was a bit of a brazen child, I guess. So I would say something like, I don't want to do that activity. I want to go with them, right? And so I should probably, you know, let the audience know that I'm trans. So I'm socially and legally, I suppose, I live in the world as a man, but my sex is female. And I was, for all intents and purposes, living as a woman until I was 39 years old. So there I was, this little girl in school being told, no, you can't go over there with the boys and do the boy things. And I definitely wanted to do the boy things. I was a tomboy. And so I would kind of put up a little fuss and put my foot down. And I would say, I'm not going to go with either of them then, right? And so that kind of persisted throughout my life, into my adolescence, into my 20s. And in my 20s, right, I'm in the military. And now in the military, males and females, we wore the same uniform, mm-hmm. mostly. We mm-hmm. did the same jobs, mostly. And so I didn't have as much of that tension, you know, that I had to push against. Then when I was back out in the civilian world and I was in different spaces, I would find the same thing, you know, like, oh, we're going to divide the room into male and female, and the men are going to go here and the women are going to go there, and they're going to have these conversations. And when I was a little bit older, right in my 30s, I would say, okay, enough is enough. And I would say, I'm going to go over here, and if there's anybody who wants to join me in this room who doesn't want to go with the men or the women, we're going to do our own third thing, right? The third option. The third space. And so that's where it really started to develop in my mind that, one, I didn't live up to other people's expectations of how I should behave as a good Mexican Catholic girl. That was very apparent growing up. And also just, you know, what was expected of women in society. I just wasn't having anything of it. And so I started to notice that more and more people would join me in these third spaces. And people started saying, you know, you should talk about this. You should write about this. Eventually I did, you know, maybe 25, almost 30 years later, I wrote a book called The Third Space, A Nonconformist Guide to the Universe, where I talk a little bit about how, you know, the third space, it's not the same as, for example, the middle path in Buddhism, right? It's not even like maybe the go with the flow or the Tao of Taoism, right? There's some components of it that might be similar. But the third space is basically coming to the conclusion that whatever society expects, whatever my family expects, whatever my faith community expects, my race, my ethnicity, my identity group, so to speak, whatever's expected of me by my government, I'm probably going to do something different. And I call that the third space. It's a space that I carve out myself. I cultivate. And of course, I'm not the only person. Some people call themselves things like renegades, out-of-the-box thinkers, black sheep, right? It's not about being a contrarian. It's not an intentional, like, rebuffing of the norms. It's just having this inner compass that says, no, that's not right for me. Mm-hmm. I want to do this other thing. But those people definitely don't like when I do this other thing, right? It causes conflict.
Right.
For sure.
Right. But given that, obviously, you have had to have, or you've been in a lot of situations that had to have been very stressful and caused you to really, like you say, sort of having to buck the trend to stand up to say that something different is okay. And, you know, I am curious on your perspective, how do you think that impacted your sleep? I mean, we're talking about sleep here. So how did that impact your sleep before and after you decided kind of that I'm going to, you know, just be me?
Well, I'd say in my teen years and in my early 20s before I went into the military, well, I guess my early teens and late teens, let's say, because I went into the military when I was 20. Part of the reason that my sleep was disrupted, in addition to any of the stressors, was probably because I was, you know, doing a little bit of drugs. And I was very keen on doing ones that kept me up, right? Mm-hmm. I liked the uppers because I wanted to be out and doing things. And, you know, I'm hyperactive, or what we call ADHD now. So it's sort of natural for me, but I wanted to do it all the time. So my sleep was disrupted in that way. But the stressors, right, the conflicts that came my way, when you're bumping up against or you're challenging deep-seated expectations of gender roles or sex roles, that would be more accurate, it causes a lot of problem, right? People are not happy when you're doing these things. And so I would be verbally accosted. I was in a few physical fights with adult men who thought it was something they needed to do was to come up and put their hands on me to push me or hit me because I was too masculine as a woman. It was very upsetting to them. And so the feelings of being, you know, not acceptable, rejected by society, marginalized, unsafe in some situations, that definitely had an impact on me. I'd say I was not as much an external locus of control person, right? Now as I was then, right? I was more external. Things in my external environment impacted me more than they do now. And that's just because I've learned, right, to be more internal. But I wasn't so internal then. So all those things did start to impact me. And, you know, my transition, so to speak, right, medical transition, people might say it is like female to male. I don't use that language anymore because I'm still female, but I live socially as a man just because of, you know, medications do this, right? Mm-hmm. My transition, like the way that I live as a trans person, is in and of itself a third space because I never felt like I was born in the wrong body. I never felt like I was going to kill myself if I didn't transition. For me, it was my third space journey, my transition journey into this third space was I'm going to live in the world socially as a man because it's an acceptable version of my masculinity, right? People don't harass me or hassle me or treat me in any prejudicial or discriminatory way now because I'm not a masculine-presenting woman. I'm just a standard, average, masculine man, but mm-hmm. I'm still female, right? So, but right. I don't get the same attention. And so because I don't get that same attention, that has reduced my stressors and the conflicts that I encounter. And therefore, I've also learned as a clinician that I need to be paying attention to sleep. And so these things created like a confluence of me being able to get a better night's sleep and have a much better life as a result.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm glad that, you know, you're at that point where you are being able to get good, comfortable, restful sleep and have a healthy life because of that. Yeah. Now, yeah. We are at a point where I need to take another commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about something else that you do as well. So hang on, we'll be back on Sleep Science Today.
Have you ever wondered why you can't sleep well? Well, there could be lots of different reasons. In order to figure it out, I wrote the book, Why Can't I Sleep Well? It includes 150 common sleep questions that are asked and answered, and I provide all of the supporting science and evidence to address each of the questions. I encourage you to get a copy of Why Can't I Sleep Well by Andrew Kolsky. It's available at www.sleepsciencetoday.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
All right, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Xander Keg, and Xander has one other trick up his sleeve here that we wanted to talk about today. And well, I'm going to let you tell it in terms of... Go ahead.
Well, so your show, I call them podcasts, but, you know, radio show, is on the UK Health Radio Network. I also have a show on the UK Health Radio Network. It's called The Umbrella Hour. I have a co-host, Dr. Ann Goldbauer. We're both trans men. We both live in Florida. Ann is a sexologist and a nurse. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And we interview LGBT people to just find out more about their lives. And it's focused on health in a really general way, a holistic way. Physical health, emotional health, mental health, financial health, spiritual health, social health, right? All the different ways that we might consider that. And so sleep is integral to all of those things. That's it's integral to everything else. Mm-hmm. We are in our third year now of the Umbrella Hour. And so we've just had a really great time interviewing people. We do on average about 32 to 35 episodes per year. So we have a lot of episodes that are already out, and it's been a lot of fun. I love being part of this like conglomerate of different shows. There's what, somewhere between 40 and 50 different shows on the UK Health Radio Network. So it's a wonderful group of people, and it's been a lot of fun.
Great. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how did you and Ann meet, and how did you decide that a radio show was something that, you know, was viable? Give us the backstory.
Absolutely. So I was a guest on one of the network's shows focused on caregiving. It was during the time when my father was still alive and I was his sole family caregiver last 5 years of his life. And so I was interviewed on the show. And I came to the attention of the host of that show because I co-founded with another social worker who's a family caregiver, the LGBTQ Caregiver Center, which is a virtual online hub for resources and research. And so he learned about the LGBTQ Caregiver Center. He learned about me. He invited me onto the show. And then I believe it was one of the founders, Johan, who was asking other show hosts, right, do you know anybody who might be a good host for another show, specifically one that's talking about transgender health? And so I was recommended or referred over to Johan, and we spoke, and he said, I definitely would like you to do a show. And then once I learned all of the ins and outs of how to do a show, right, not just hosting, but also editing and all of these things, I thought, okay, this is not my skill set. I need to find somebody else to do the show. And so I knew Ann, who's a documentarian on top of being a sexologist and a nurse. And we met when we were both living in Jacksonville, Florida. Neither one of us do now, but when we were both living there, we met. And I said, oh, a documentarian. They'll know, Ann will know how to edit, you know, a radio show. And so I said, hey, Ann, you want to do this show? And he was like, absolutely. So for like 2 episodes, Ann did it on his own. And then I was a guest on the Umbrella Hour. And then he reached out to me and said, hey, you want to co-host? And here we are. I do all of the finding for the most part, like 99% of the time, I find the guests and I wrangle the guests. I get all of their information. I get their photos. I schedule the podcast. Ann does all of the technical stuff, right? The recording and the editing and uploading it to, you know, the portfolio so that it's accessible by the network individuals who take it from there. So we've worked really well as a team together. And thankfully, right? Because otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And so I'm so glad that I handed it over, and then he invited me back to co-host.
Wonderful. Wow, that's a great great story as to how that all got started. So clearly, if you've been doing this for a while, you have to have some particular shows or stories that stand out. You care to share some of the ones that must, you know, really kind of be present in your mind?
Well, so the focus is health, and the community that we invite onto our show are members of the LGBT community, so lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans individuals, but we want a very wide or broad cross spectrum, right? We don't want to be locked into any particular viewpoint, so we want the viewpoint diversity as well as the diversity of the community itself. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is we invite people onto the show who have viewpoints that are not popular, right? And you might imagine why I'm attracted to this. Whether I agree with them or not, I'm attracted to, this person is saying something that is completely different than what some other people are saying who tend to have the focal, you know, point on social media or on the news or on television, in the movies, right? Mm-hmm. We get one perspective primarily from those vantage points. Well, what are some of the other perspectives? So I love to bring those people on if they're willing and to talk about it so publicly. But I'm typically learning about them because they've written a blog post, they've spoken on a podcast, they've written a book, they've been interviewed on the news, something like that. And I'm like, ooh, I want to talk to that person. So, you know, the show that we just went live recently, within the last couple of days, that's Dr. Kathleen Stock. She was a philosophy professor in England. She lives in England. She started something called the Lesbian Project, And I'm not going to tell you anything more about it. You have to go listen because, you know, the Lesbian Project is on a mission to, I don't know, create more awareness about lesbian lives because it turns out that in some ways, because of the broad acceptance of gay and lesbian people in a lot of Western societies in particular, a lot of people have sort of moved on. And they're not paying attention anymore to the lives of gay and lesbian people. And so, you know, I find that that's important. We interviewed a friend of mine last year sometime. We're going to have him back on the show soon. His name is Kim McCoy. He is a chiropractor. And so he talks about the different ways that he does chiropractic, right? There's a lot of different methodologies, right, chiropractic. And so he talks about the one that he uses in particular, which is really good for releasing emotional backlog, so to speak, right, the backup of emotions in our body. And so that's really fascinating. And I really was interested in learning about that. And so we had him on the show. We've had over 100 people, I think, on the show at this point or close to that. So those are the two that are popping into my mind. But once people start listening, they'll recognize, oh, these hosts, right, On and I, we don't tend to take a position. We don't argue with our guests. We don't challenge their positions. We just ask questions to bring out more information about their positions and their perspectives and their viewpoints and their experiences. And then the listener can make up their mind about whether they agree, disagree, a little of both, right? That's more what we're interested in bringing to light, is that we're not a monolith in the LGBT community. We come from many different racial, ethnic, religious, socioeconomic, geographic, and political, backgrounds.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you hit on something there that really hit home to me, which is when I was getting my training in mental health, we all have a supervisor who walks us through our residency and all this. And my supervisor taught me something, which was, especially in those cases where you have you can imagine like the Thanksgiving table where there's disagreements over politics or whatever it may be, right? And it's like, what do you do? How do you handle those situations? And what he taught me, which I use with clients all the time now because I agree with him, is it's more about rather than – you're never going to convince someone of your viewpoint because they've decided what their decision is. What you can do is you can become curious to learn about theirs.
Yes.
And if you become curious about them, they may become curious about you. Doesn't mean they're going to change their mind, but they might. And it doesn't mean that you're going to change your mind, but you might. So yeah. The concept of rather than trying to fight it and, you know, beat them into submission to listening to what you want them to believe, by being open, by learning, by asking the questions, by being curious, you open up the opportunity for a dialogue. You open up the opportunity for understanding. And, you know, I think that's the most effective way that you can possibly do to deal with anything, especially if you have someone who has a very strong viewpoint on whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I mean, I wanted to know more about how to deal with conflict. So I went and got a master's degree in conflict analysis and resolution, right? And I wanted to learn how to have conversations with people who, for whatever religious viewpoint they had, thought that, you know, somebody like me was a sinner or was going to some sort of bad place when I die. And I wanted to know, like, where are they getting those ideas from? And so I went and did a master's in theology. I wanted to learn. Right. And then I became a clinical social worker to help people that were struggling with, you know, challenges and dysfunctions in their life in many different ways, because a lot of the times they're resisting reality, mm-hmm. right? They're mm-hmm. resisting what just is. That doesn't mean we have to accept bad behavior and bad environments, but we can accept that it's a bad situation and then we need to know what we're going to do about it. And, you know, this thing about being curious, absolutely. I'm involved in two different organizations right now. One is called ProHuman Foundation, which was started by Brian Bartning and Daryl Davis. And everybody, Daryl Davis wrote the foreword for my book. You should look up Daryl Davis and listen to his TED Talks. That's all I'll say. Amazing, amazing man. And I'm so grateful that he wrote the foreword for my book. And I'm so appreciative of my ability to be able to, I met him. We've been working together since 2021. It's fantastic. The other is the Braver Angels. I've been involved with Braver Angels for the last few years. And it's about depolarization. And we bring together the, quote, reds and the blues and the yellows or the golds, right? The independents, the libertarians. And we're all about being curious and trying to find common ground to move forward on big issues like election reform and immigration reform. And we come together in many different ways, in workshops, in debates, in caucus and alliance meetings. So check out ProHuman Foundation, check out Braver Angels if you're interested in learning more about, like, how can I become curious? Because, you know, when you get curious, that helps to resolve some of those conflicts. And resolving those conflicts is definitely going to help us get a better night's sleep. It's all together.
Right.
It's all interrelated. It's integrated together. Right.
Well, I have to thank you for all of your time and everything that you've shared. We're out of time for today's show, but this has been very interesting and intriguing, and I'm glad that you were able to join us. Again, your show is called The Umbrella Hour on the UK Health Radio Network, so people can find you there where they find this show. And give it a listen. Let us know what you think. And Xander, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. And Andrew, you're going to be a guest on our show, and you're going to be talking about sleep and a little bit of how maybe LGBT people might be having a more difficult time with sleep, or how, you know, and how that they might improve their lives through getting a better night's sleep. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
I am looking forward to it as well. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.